I'm here in the Pleasant Stone with Alona Sayek and Matthew Ackland, who have brought a piece to the Fringe called Broken Dolls. And I've got lots of questions to ask about this particular piece. I'm going to start with a really tough one, and I'm going to ask it to the playwright first, Matthew. When you encounter stories, you know, from true life that you might call shattering, that might call, you know, that talk about things like brutality and things that a lot of people, you know, who live in the cozy comfort of the UK can't even imagine, how do you transfer that into a piece of theatre?
I think it really needs to be, it needs to be told in a way where we can identify with the brutality and what these people, you know, in real life are actually suffering. And there has to be, yes, there has to be something that is, that we as an audience can identify with in that. And it is a human story. And creating a solid arc is one of the only ways, I think, that works in order to do that. And also in realism as well. Presenting it as a domesticated drama is the most visceral of way of presenting a story, especially like this, about sex trafficking. So, yeah.
But, you know, up here, there are lots of shows that kind of make that claim. Some will transpose and change it, and it might appear symbolically in physical theatre. Others are much more literal and just literally bring the essence of it, you know, using realism. You know, what was the root of your choice on how you brought this?
So, yeah, with the way I chose to present this argument, if you like, or this story, is, well, as a playwright, I write predominantly about victim trauma. So that's my analysis constantly. It's always analysing psychoses, trauma, and also the stressors and actors that you know, affect individuals, especially children, from a very early age. With Broken Dolls, what I wanted to expose was the post-traumatic stress disorder that a lot of victims suffer once they've been indoctrinated into the global sex industry. And also the learned behavior, the learned helplessness aspect as well, and also discuss what potentially, what traumas potentially could develop and build the mindset of a sex trafficker. And that is hinted at slightly throughout the play. But it's, yes, it was very tough. It took nearly 25 drafts to actually get this to where it is now, and a year and a half's worth of research. But it's one of those things where there has to be a neutral standpoint in exposing the issue. And this is why it's in a journalistic documentary dramatic form. I'm not presenting a solution to the problem. I'm only presenting what we know to be true and what actually happens. And it is for the audience to decide how they wish to act. And, I mean, you know, with what I hope them to do anyway is change society in whichever way they can after viewing and being affected viscerally by this piece of work.
And if I'd got the chance to follow you around with Channel 4-type cameras during that research process, can you describe that a bit to me? Where did we go? What did that look like?
Obviously, it was a lot of you know, news, research paper-based research, so desk-related. It's very hard as a male, first of all, and secondly, as a you know, as a playwright, to actually go in and interview victims. The NGOs and non-profits do tend to keep them, you know, sort of behind closed doors and quite safe, away from outside influence, which is what they need during their rehabilitation process. But one of the ways in which I had to derive some of this research was I was actually in Dubai, and I had met a victim of trafficking there who, while she was actually working, and she pointed out. It was a very harrowing moment, actually. She pointed out the after I spoke to her for a while in this bar in Dubai, she pointed out that her sister was the one who was her pimp, and her sister was stood about a stone's throw behind me, and she was watching me the entire time. But she also was indicating to the bartender and also the bouncer at the door, because they were part of this this group that were working there at the bar as well. But there's also a fine line. One has to realize that you can put these women in gross danger if you do try and help, and if you do push anything too far. And the first scene of the play was derived and taken from an interview that I did actually conduct with a Romanian victim who, and it runs in that sort of sequence, in that form. You know, you've got to know when you have to stop, because if you incite and incur trauma, the victim's going to experience, they will return to their abuser, in this case their pimp, etc., or trafficker, and resort to them for help, just because of the way in which they've been indoctrinated into the sex industry. So there was a lot of danger, and also I had to be very, very careful at certain times exactly what I was asking, exactly what I was saying, and how I wanted to actually get that information.
And Ilona, if, I don't know if you can remember this. This is kind of a respectful request to go into your inner life for a moment. Take me to the very first moment you read the script, that first reading, and what happened inside you when you read it for the first time.
Well, when I first got the script for Broken Dolls, there's this moment you go through, I think, and it's not just as an actress and as a woman and as an artist, but as a human being, where you feel this sense of desperation that comes through this character. And I felt that it was my duty, in all honesty, when I picked up the script and I read it, to show what it was like for these girls, to use myself in whatever capacity that I possibly can, to tell the world what it would be like to be in this body for a day, for a year, for 2 years, in this case, in the case of Narkiza. The script just spoke to me straight away, and it pulled at my heartstrings. I don't even know how to tell you the wave of, I guess, emotion that went over me when I picked up the script. And this is the sort of role that I always try to do.
But then when it does do that, and you know, that's an incredible experience to have, do you then as the actor sort of have to locate that personal stuff somewhere different from, this has to also be good theatre and believable? What did you do with that stuff? Did that fire up your rehearsal? Did you have to let it go a bit and then meet it again? You know, what was going on inside you? Because this is such powerful stuff, isn't it?
It's sort of a process, I guess. I spent a lot of time researching, doing my own desk research, as Matthew was saying. Just going through different victim testimonials. There's a guide called the World Sex Guide, where men go up and post their experiences with different women and what it was like. And just going through those accounts and taking that all in and then bringing that into rehearsal and working with the director and working with the playwright as well, it just becomes a process and a progression.
Let me follow you with my cameras, if I can, into those first rehearsals. What did they look and sound like?
Oh, well, the first rehearsals, usually starts as a table read. So we all kind of get together and get to know each other a bit. There was a lot of devising that went along with it as well, because although the script was already there, thankfully I was working with a wonderful director and a wonderful playwright who were very open and willing to allow us as the actors to give our own input and produce our own characters as we went along through this journey. So, it was a lot of improv-ing, a lot of just throwing in whatever, even words that would come in the moment that were true to us doing the work, as opposed to just going what was in the text.
So these early readings, Matthew, were research for you to redraft?
Yes and no. More, there were early What I needed to see earlier on was I needed to see how the arc of the script and the scenes, for example, would flow, you know, during the actual play, and what needed, which characters needed more substance and more emphasis. Fortunately, with Narkeza's character, Narkeza was actually taken from about three different plays on the same subject matter. So, you know, I started off with that. But what Ilona did, which I'm going to just comment on now, what Ilona did from the very first audition, actually, was she opened up the actual arc of the first scene, because originally there was no investigative journalist in the play. He was imaginary. We didn't see him. So Ilona was having to play to, obviously, you know, imaginary journalist in the room. And it was the first time that I'd actually heard the words spoken. It was the first time I'd actually seen the humanized form of this character, Narkeza. And what was very interesting to me was all of the elements that I wanted to get that I couldn't do through stage direction and the actual words themselves. Excuse me. I was fortunate enough to have an actress do that, and actually see that very, very rich, detailed, layered transition within the scene, where we have the forced promiscuity at the beginning, and then by the end of it, we have the vulnerability that is needed, and it is the whole point of this piece of work. And, you know, again, in those early readings, you can't predict what the outcome's going to be, and you need that kind of openness within actors themselves to actually be able to give you that substance. What it also does is it also pushes you into a direction where you're inspired to write more based on behavior. When an actor discovers something that, they bring in a prop and they start using it, and then a choice changes, there's always the impetus to put in another, to give them commission. They commission you to write a response to that addition, and it's a beautiful dynamic, and that's how I wanted to work with this play in developing it. And in terms of where it's come to now, what we've got at this point, yes, there's a lot of R&D that went into, you know, bringing it here, I suppose.
But, I mean, I've heard that a lot up here with verbatim work particularly, where the writer stayed involved. You know, some writers write the script, hand it over, and, you know, they go and see it on the first night. But a lot of verbatim work, it's the rehearsal process and those early readings that is informative to the writer to then go back and rewrite. And that says something about rehearsal, doesn't it? The rehearsal brings its own truth to a situation.
Yeah, I think it's now a process where, as artists, this is, a new modernist way of working. And it really is, especially with playwrights who are living, and it is a new piece of work, you constantly need that sort of, as I was saying, you know, that dynamic, push and pull dynamic of having a playwright being present and seeing what new work is contrived from it, and then still being involved in the rehearsal process. But everybody has within the theatre, I believe everybody has their own job description, and they do it to the best of their abilities, and it just takes that collaborative mindset to bring it all together. And and I think that's the way to work. And it is certainly very inspiring being here in Edinburgh and seeing, you know, more companies working like that. It's refreshing as well.
So, Ilona, then, from those early readings, just if you can characterise some of your journey as an actor to Edinburgh, how it all evolved and developed to a place where it can be performed in front of an audience.
Well, of course, we went through a lot of rehearsals to get here. And it was interesting. We had some technical issues as we went along trying to bring the project over, and that slightly affected, I would say, our rehearsal process. But then the more we got into it, and the more, like, Peter came on board, the director that we have now, who's absolutely wonderful, and
he was the director, was he?
Yes, Peter Kelly is the director. And you know, just to have that ability to work with two people that really respect and know the material. I don't even know what to say. It's been a long journey to get here. And I'm really happy to be here. I'm happy that we are having the responses that we're having from some of the audience members that we have the pleasure to talk with after the show. Doing this subject matter, I think, is just so important, and that's something that we've all stressed along the way, that it's not about us, it's about these girls, and it's about making sure that their story is told in a truthful, honest manner.
But going back to your kind of, one of your motives about you wanted this story to get out there, and you're one of the performers, the way for that to happen, this is a story that people are coming to for, you know, reasons to do with its material. Is the fourth wall entirely up for you as you're immersed in this character, or are you aware of that audience and its reactions to this material?
Well, I think everybody works differently. For me, it's always been the process of putting my attention on the other person. It's not about me. It's about the people that I'm working with in the scene that I'm doing. For that reason, no, my attention doesn't go toward the audience. It's always on the actor that I'm working with. And I feel like, as in life, you and I right now are having a conversation, and it's a truthful reaction for me to be responding to whatever question that you're giving me, and you likewise are listening, and that's sort of the exchange. And I feel that as an actor, that is the process, and that's what it should be, because for the external, for everybody that's watching it, you want to see a conversation. Conversations are actually really interesting sometimes when you observe people. It's about being truthful under an imaginary circumstance. I guess that's the best way, for lack of a better phrase.
Final question to the writer again, Matthew. Edinburgh's pretty unique. Shows going in and out, shows cut down to fit in with time slots. You know, kind of relentlessness about it as well. Has the particular Edinburgh experience impacted on you as a writer of this piece?
Yes, it has. It's actually, just following on from the last question and talking about the fourth wall. So one of the main things that I always wanted to employ with this piece of work was that it's a dynamic show. It could go anywhere. And because of the nature of the subject matter and what I wanted to achieve and what we're trying to achieve now in exposing the issue and, affecting society to enact change, the show needed a very minimalistic set, because it's an actor-driven piece, and that's how I always wanted it to be. So in terms of fitting into the... Let's backtrack. Okay, so basically, a lot of our complications included, but is not limited to, but included 2 days before we were about to go up, our set that we'd purchased, because we're based in New York, our set that we'd purchased from Cardiff couldn't come up, so we had to go and find a new set. That was one of the aspects. We didn't have a lighting technician. We didn't have anybody doing sounds. We had to organize all of that. We got there in the end, which is very, very good, by grace of God. And so we're all ready to go, and it's all good. But the fortunate thing was that we'd always decided the set was going to be minimalistic, and it was going to be representative and representational, symbolic of the circumstances. And that has worked tremendously well. In terms of, it's very interesting, this year at the Fringe, I understand, and this is the first time we've been to the Fringe, I understand that this year they've combined all the festivals together the book festival's overlapping with the Festival Fringe, the International Festival as well, and also the Free Fringe as well.
Yeah. I mean, they always happen at the same time, so that's why you've come into a maelstrom, really.
Right, exactly. I was going to say, so it's interesting to see, where our audience lies and what we're, where the play actually slots in, And it's good that we've had a lot of interest. It seems that the anti-sex trafficking pieces tend to be a theme at the fringe. But it's, for us, it's more interesting to see where we go afterwards and where we can take it back to the US. Because in the US, again, where we're based, you know, human trafficking is a huge issue. And it's also an internal domestic problem as well that needs to be brought to more light. So, yeah, I mean, but it's been a very good experience, enjoying it tremendously. And,
Yeah, well, and just going back to your question about the fourth wall, I mean, I think one of the reasons why the subject matter becomes so uncomfortable for audiences to watch is because we do break it in places. That fourth wall goes away, where you have the person who's viewing it suddenly, at the beginning of the play, the pimp asks an audience member for their number. And there's this minimal interaction that happens. And then later on, you can hear Narcisse's testimonial that's recorded. And there are these moments that I feel as if they kind of intrude in the audience's personal space as well. And that kind of pulls it in. And to me, that's actually what makes the script so interesting.
So, Matthew, Ilona, thank you for talking about Broken Dolls here at the Edinburgh Fringe.